Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host my show, Life Laughter Happiness. Today, we're going to have what our guest today, which is Heather Paris. Are you there, Heather?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. And hopefully, our guest host, DT, will be on here soon when she'll call in. And when she calls in, I'll make sure and connect her. I think I read somewhere, you're the only model ever to win the Internet. Is it true that you're the only model ever to win the Internet Model of the Year twice or something?
Yeah, when the Internet first started really being, I guess, the Internet, you know, they had a way to track things a lot easier. Like, they would track hits to, like, my own, you know, modeling site, which it wasn't a pay site. It was just, you know, your portfolio, your resume, that kind of thing. And then they would track hits that you were featured on at other sites and, you know, links that you had. It was basically all about traffic and, you know, who was the most downloaded and stuff like that. And 2 years I had won it. The first year, actually, Cindy Margolis, who, wonderful person, she actually has won it a couple times. And, you know, I remember there being, like, things with Danny Ash and most downloaded, like they would fight about it or whatever. I don't know. I stayed out of it. But I know 2 years I had actually won it the first year. And then I had taken I retired. And I came back onto, I don't want to say the circuit, but
can I see if she's on, if she's called in or not?
Sure.
Okay. DT, is that you?
Yes, it is. Hi, Johnny.
Oh, hey, how are you?
I'm great.
I noticed your number didn't show up.
I'm sorry, what?
Your number didn't show up when you called in.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
But I want to introduce you.
That can be a blessing, though, too, at times.
Yeah, this is Heather Paraso. This is DT. DT, this is Heather.
Hi, Heather. Hi. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Really nice. So, So, anyhow, basically, to make a long story short, I had retired and came back into the industry. And the very first year back into the industry, I had actually won it again. Now, since then, it's become really hard to track. I mean, it's almost impossible now to try to track. So, I think for somebody to sit there and say, geez, I'm the most downloaded woman, well, what, on Google, on Yahoo, you know, what, online? It would be crazy to try to track that. It really would. But, yeah, so that's kind of, you know, at the time, I know the first one anyhow, that was a really big deal because that was when everybody was really coming on to the Internet, and it was all new to everybody, really. It was really new then. But the second time was really, really sweet because, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm not 21, and I had no expectations of, you know, coming back onto the scene that strong, to be honest. So it was really, I was really, really grateful about it and really shocked and really happy all at the same time.
What made you decide to be a model instead of another career? Not to put down being a model. I'm just saying, what led you down that road?
To be honest, it was kind of a fluke. I don't know, DT, I'm not sure how old you are, but do you remember, does anybody remember Teen Magazine? Not like Teen Vogue, it was Teen Magazine. And they used to have this thing.
Yes, I do.
Do you? Okay, you remember how they used to have that great mall store? Like, remember Kathy Ireland won it the 1 year?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yeah. Well, my friends, I had a prom picture, okay, from my junior year at prom. And they actually had sent it in to the great model search. And so, you know, I'm like halfway through my senior year in high school, and I get this letter sent saying that you've made the top 98 out of 24,000 girls. Your picture is going to be in the January 2000 issue, you know, of Teen Magazine. You're now in the running for the top 12.
Wow.
So, I mean, I guess we kind of all sat around at lunch scratching our heads going, God, does that make me hot? Does that mean I'm, like, okay looking? You know, like, I knew I wasn't ugly, but, you know, I never thought that. So,
right.
You know, at that point, we were kind of like, maybe I'll give it a try. And I found a really nice agent down in Columbus who had been a New York model previously. And she came back to Columbus, Ohio, started an agency. She really, actually the agency was called The Right Direction. And she really did help me go in the right direction. And it just kind of one thing went to the next, to the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just really slowly started. And, you know, of course, when you're done with school, I was working. I wasn't sure about college. And I started doing some swimsuit competitions. And it was just like, it was just one of those things that just happened. It really just happened.
So you didn't have your heart set on being a veterinarian or something, and then they whisk you away for this, huh?
Yes,
I did.
It
just sort of fell in your lap.
No, I wanted to be a vet. I wanted to be a veterinarian.
I just pulled that out of thin air.
I know that you like horses, so, I mean, maybe if you hadn't, you probably would have been a model. You probably would have been, like, a horse feeder.
Well, I really wanted to be a veterinarian. Like you said, with the horses, I wanted to be a large equine vet or a large animal veterinarian. But the funny thing was I had been taking, you know, the 4-H vet science books because I was always involved in 4-H, and I had been taking the books. And one of the projects that you had to do was you had to go out, you know, with a vet and go ride around with them. You know, that was one of the summer projects. And I'll never forget the first day I went out with the vet. They were actually gelding or neutering, I guess it would be a common term. We call it gelding a horse. And I was fine. When they gave him the shot to, you know, like put him down, anesthesia, you know, put him down and everything. When he made that first slice, down I went. And
you fainted?
He took me back home and he basically said, you know what? He goes, Sally, I think she needs to pick a different career. And that was my mom.
I've always sort of, it's the more I read about you, not to go off into a tangent, but it's funny because you're very similar to Angie Everhart.
Oh, really?
I mean, because she's from Ohio. Did you know that?
No, I did not. I was not aware of that.
She's from Ohio. You're both redheads. You're both, you were both, you know, you've done modeling. You both have, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think she rides horses a lot.
Oh, does she? I don't have any idea. I know I'd love to have her looks and her bank account. I would like to have her resume and her bank account and her looks. That'd be sweet.
I interviewed her on the show. I was wanting you to have it that could be the guest host because you're so similar.
Yeah, I have no idea. I might actually have to read up on that because I'm not real sure. I know I like her couple movies that she's, you know, been in and stuff like that. And I think the same thing. You know, I think she's beautiful for a redhead. She's absolutely gorgeous, and she really stands out. Definitely.
Is there anything you wanted to ask DT?
Not as yet. I'll wait and see if there's something that comes up that I can jump in on.
Okay,
well,
good.
I was going to kind of ask DT, how did you get into, you know, hosting the radio shows and everything?
Well, I started out, to back up the story from day one, I got a divorce, and there was a gentleman that I was dating very early on, just right out after my divorce, and he had done something, just one or two things, just a tiny bit different than most guys do them. Not a lot, maybe like only 3% different than what most guys do. But in that 3%, I thought what he did was so effective and so easy. And I thought to myself, wow. In fact, I bolted out of bed one day at 4 a.m. in the morning after a date with him, and I said, you know what, I got to rush to my desk and write some of this stuff down because this is just too good. I can bottle this up and sell it. So I figured, you know, it's so easy to do. Why don't most men do these things? And it's so effective. You know, I mean, they tear their hair out with regard to how to win the women over, and they come up with all kinds of cockamamie things that absolutely do not work. But this guy was just a natural at it. And so I took his one or two things, and I really began to focus on it, and I wrote a couple of blogs, and then the blogs turned into, like, daily blogs, and then people really liked what I was writing, and then, you know, after a while, I decided to compile, you know, my thoughts and everything and write a book. So I wrote a book, and now I'm in the final editing stages of that book. And in the course of this year, I have my own cable TV show, and I've done many radio interviews, of
oh
which Johnny
God.
has interviewed me a couple of times, and some other, you know, guest hosts have.
Sorry.
So it's been quite a process, and you know, there's my observations that I've had for many years, and luckily I have an academic background in this, so I can bring that into play. And aside from all of that, I had theories and notions that I just wanted to confirm. Like, I in my head knew that they would work and that they were true, but I wanted to take it to the street and confirm it. So I interviewed 20,000 men, you know, in the course of my blogs and everything, and just to validate myself that I was on the right track. And the rest is history. So hopefully, coming to a bookshelf near you, my book will be
oh
on the
God.
Stands, and I hope this will be a springboard for me to go into other media, because that's like the main goal, is to get a broadcast TV show or broadcast radio show and go mainstream.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
the
sure.
plan.
That's great. Yeah, it's weird. It starts out, and I think a lot of people don't, you know, realize that, but yeah, you don't think that something small, it starts out as something small, and the next thing you know, it goes from one thing to the next, and,
yeah,
you know, maybe you don't really think that it's, you know, was it like a goal of yours? Because I know mine, that was just kind of a fluke. It was just nothing I really thought about doing.
It was nothing that I planned. It was just something that fell in my lap, and I thought to myself, wow, there needs to be a voice to this. I need to fuel the fire on this, because I think so many men are clueless and lost with regard to these issues. And there's a lot of men who do what I do. There's a lot of men teaching men how to get dates and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a lot of merit to that, and I think a lot of it is good advice. The thing that I don't like about the advice is that mainly it teaches you how to be a player, and I don't believe in being a player. Like, I think the reason why a guy becomes a player is because he doesn't have game for real. Otherwise, you would do it with integrity and not be a player. So I actually teach my men how to get the same result and do it in a clean and honorable way. You know, and
right.
still get the same result without having to be a player. And a player is someone I define as someone that lies, cheats, or misleads the woman primarily to get sex, basically.
Absolutely.
So I feel like if you're only out to get sex, I'll give you sex only. If you're out to get a relationship, I'll give you a relationship. I mean, the same tactics work, you know, regarding each model. So, you know, I teach them how to get it done and do it in an honorable way. And it's fun, and it's so easy. It's just so easy. It's just basically all you have to do is stop assuming that the other sex acts just like you.
Like
my whole premise is that I beat into my men is that the opposite sex is nothing like you at all in any way, shape, or form. However way that you think, most likely she's going to think the opposite way. And that's how you get through to them, is because once you realize the strategy and the drive and the motivation of the other gender, then it's like a piece of cake. You can see it from a mile away. And
right.
when I write the
I
women's
agree.
Book, I will write similar things, that women assume a lot of things about men, and they only assume these things because they think that the male gender operates just like the female gender, and they most certainly do not. So,
well, like, you know, for instance, DT, she has a thing where she kind of narrows down about how to talk to men to the four C's.
Right. I have like a little formula that I use, and I tell them that if you do these four steps, you can win over any woman, whether it's just to win her over for the night or to win her over for a long-term relationship. They work on any woman. And I have a lot of people who say, you know, well, all women are different and women are so complicated and how can you make such a statement and blah, 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 blah. And the reason why I was able to devise a formula that works is because I don't look at what's happening right now today. I strip back their question back 10,000 years ago to caveman days. Like, what are our inherent core animal needs and drives? And I feel like, well, how would the caveman have handled it? Or how would the cave woman have handled it way back when? And based on those core needs, I bring it present to the future, and that's how I, you know, have them solve their problems, solve their issues. So the good thing is, a woman, you can figure out a woman. You just have to use these four little steps, and away you go. It's like so easy.
Well, see, and I think, too, that a lot of things have, you know, like, to me, this is to me, I wasn't around in the 50s, obviously, but I think life was a little easier then. I think there was clear-cut gender differences. Women had certain roles, men had certain roles. I think in today's society, that those roles have really become skewed. I feel like men have been pounded in the last decade by talk shows and everything else that they need to feel like a woman. They need to be more emotional, more sensitive, more feminine. And I think women, you know, because of the divorce rate, because of the separate, you know, children being raised more in single, you know, family homes, that women are now having to assume the role of a man, a mom, and their own, you know, like their own wife and husband and their own family unit all in one. I think women have really had to come up to the corporate world just like it started in the 80s. And I just think that there's been a lot lost as far as what's expected of both guys and girls. You know, I know myself sitting here, I'm divorced, I have a child, and I'm single. You know, so I don't have anybody here helping me pay the bills. You know, I have to do everything myself. And so it's kind of hard to sit back and just let some guy bowl you over, you know, or push too much or have too many expectations right off the bat when you're like, hey, whoa here, Hoss. You know, you're not here helping me pay the bills. You're not doing this. I have to do it myself. So it's really hard to sit back, I think, and be just like a 1950s or 1960s style feminine female because you can't assume that role anymore.
No, you cannot. The lines are very blurred today, very blurred. And, you know, not all of it is in a good way. And I think people are just, like, confused, you know, should I open the door? Shouldn't I open the door? Should I, you know, pick up the check? Shouldn't I pick up the check? Oh, should I wait for her to call me? And, you know, I'm just going to sit here and wait for, you know, her to approach me. You know, it's just easier that way. So, yeah, it's totally all confusing now. I mean, guys don't know whether they're coming or going. I mean, it's like a really, I think it's a really terrible time to be a guy.
I kind of do, too. And the other thing I'm noticing, which I don't know in all your interviews and everything, but have you noticed that guys are starting their lives a lot later? Like, I remember back when I was 21 and 22, how guys were versus how they were at 26 and 27. I mean, to be honest, most of my guy friends back when I was 26, you know, they were like engaged or getting married, or they were already with the person that they were going to be with. They were already in their careers. They were done with college or just finishing up if they were a lawyer or a doctor. I had a few of those friends that were just getting finished.
I think we have a caller. Do you want me to take, I'll take this caller. We have a caller, okay?
Sure.
All right. Okay.
You're right, though, Heather. They are starting much later today. The marriage statistics show that they're, you know, getting married later and later. I think the average age for a male today is 28 to get married. But I think the marriage timeline, I think it's a good thing for people to wait. I really do. I don't recommend anyone, male or female, getting hooked up in a relationship prior to the age of 25. I want them to finish their education. I want them to get their career kick-started for a year or two and, you know, get a little bit under their belt. Call
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, do you have a question?
Yeah, actually, I was just listening to the radio on the blogcast. I'm one of Heather's friends on MySpace, and she caught my attention when she was talking about the lines being blurred and guys not knowing whether they're coming or going. Because man, I feel it every day.
That was my comment. Hi, I'm
BT. Hi.
I have a MySpace also. It's Dating Tips for Men. I don't know if you've checked that out.
You know, it probably wouldn't hurt me to. I haven't been in a serious relationship in probably, going on 4 years now. I haven't even actually dated for over a year, almost a year and a half now.
Wow.
And it almost seems like every time I go out, and I'm just starting to build an acting career for myself. So given the fact that I'm so involved with that, it's not like I really have the time or energy to pursue a serious relationship. Excuse me. But even the times that I'm out and am tempted to approach a woman, like you were saying earlier, I feel lost. I mean, I literally don't know whether I'm coming or going with some of the stuff that I'm seeing out there today.
Well, you know, I think, can I ask how old you are?
Certainly. I'm not going to say I'm going to answer that, but yeah, you can ask.
Okay. Well, it needs some more of a background.
Within the last 2 weeks, I turned 49.
Okay. That makes a little bit of a difference too. See, you're like you were raised in the you open doors, you pay for the date, you ask the girl out, you call. You know, I think you were raised old school probably too. And now,
well, there were not to interrupt, but there were a lot of guys in my generation who were not raised that way. So that's a little bit of an assumption on your part right off the bat. Because
really?
Not everybody from my generation were instilled with, and you're absolutely right in saying that I was raised that way, but I know tons of people my age who were not raised and instilled with those kind of characteristics.
Well, maybe it's always been like that then, and it's just one of those things where some of the guys keep finding the wrong girls and the girls keep finding the wrong guys. That, you know, that could very well be, you know. I know me. The whole idea of dating and trying to find Mr. Right makes me about one of three chunks because I'm just, you know, of that thinking of how many toes you have to kiss before you find a prince.
Well, and that goes back to the point that you had brought up before, and what prompted me to call was, what is the definition of Mr. Right anymore? I mean, with the lines having been so blurred and with the empowerment of women and the softening, quote-unquote, of men, I've been out on numerous dues, I'll say, with women, not dates, because they were just friends, but who literally felt uncomfortable with the idea of a man opening doors for them.
I got to be honest, right now, I don't know how to take it either, because, well, I don't want to say too much, but just getting out of a not-so-great relationship, you know, it's like weird, and my brain sits there and it'll tell me, Heather, this is how it's supposed to be. This is normal. This is how a gentleman's supposed to be. But yet, when you're used to, you condition yourself to be used to something so much, you forget, and it's almost like you want to sit back and go, oh, God, what's he out for? What's he out to get? You know, what's the ulterior motive?
Well, actually, even going back to my last serious girlfriend, and again, we're talking about 4 years ago when she was 11, I didn't have to do anything special. I mean, if you look at it very basically and pragmatically, I didn't have to really do anything special. I knew where she was going to be when I came home. I knew where she was going to come home at night. I knew how she felt about me. I knew how I felt about her. And it was one of those situations where if I didn't go out of my way, it would not have been a big deal. But I felt obligated in showing her, or trying to show her, how special she was in my eyes to do all of those type of things for. In the end, it turned out that she actually felt like it made her, I guess she kind of felt like I was doing it because I didn't think she was capable of doing it for herself. It made her feel like, you don't have to do this for me, I can do it, you know. And instead of making her feel special, it actually had the exact opposite effect, and it made her feel like, well, why do you feel you need to do this? Don't you think I'm capable of doing it?
But see, that's where you guys should have had a conversation then. If you were picking up any hint that she was being standoffish about it
or looking at it in a derogatory
or negative way, that's where you should have said, hey, you know, maybe we should sit down for a minute and let me tell you why I'm doing this for you, because I don't think you're getting it. You know, and again, that would go back to communication.
Yeah, no. There were none of those signals, and it was never, ever brought up, actually, until we had broken up.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. But interestingly enough, I had mentioned that to a couple of other of these, like I said, friends that I had been out with, and they had mentioned the same thing. And they said, yeah, when I'm out with my husband or boyfriend or whatever, every once in a while I feel that same way, like I can do it myself. I have to remind myself that he's only doing it to make me feel special. But every once in a while, at the same time, I feel like, geez, you know, I'm capable of doing this myself. So it wasn't just my ex-girlfriend. It's all other women that have this mindset as well.
Right.
Okay, does that answer your question?
I don't know that I actually...
Your question is, how should you deal with the confusion with all of this? I think, well, the four principles that I lay out in winning over a woman, the first and foremost principle is, women seek men who are confident. And to be in a state of confusion is probably like the antithesis of what they're looking for. So you have to find a way to do for them, to be the, you know, archetypical, you know, protector, provider type person without making them feel less than or that they're not capable of doing it themselves. So I guess on your next journey into this thing, you're going to have to come up with a way to make them feel that they absolutely are capable, that you absolutely, you know, I don't know what the specifics are, but, you know, they're capable with their mind, they're capable with their intelligence, they're capable with their emotions or whatever. That's going to have to somehow be the underlying message, and then you're just layering it because you're doing this because it makes you feel good and you want to look out for her or open the door or pull the chair or what have you.
Not that
she's not capable.
Right, and it brings up another dichotomy, which you just again mentioned, which is, how do you be the provider, the rock, the protector, and yet still have the softness and the sensitivity and the emotional side that they're looking for? They're dichotomies.
That's a very, very good question, and it's one, I think it's one of the biggest lies that women tell. They often say stuff like, well, I want a sensitive man, or well, I want a nice man. I don't find that statement to be true at all. The advice that I give my men is, you can be those things, but just don't be them early on. Wait until at least 4 months into the relationship. Show her your confident side first, your leader protective side first, and don't bring the you know, soft emotional side into it for several months. And the reason why I say that is because women flip out. They say they want all that, but then once they have a guy who does those things, they're like, you would not believe how much they badmouth such men behind the man's back to their girlfriends when they're from you. So
and it almost sounds like you're...
It's kind kind of like a few good men, that they can't handle it. You know, when Nichol said, you guys can't handle the truth, they can't handle it. They want it, but they can't handle it. So they have to know that you're the stable one, that you're the rock first, and then you can introduce some of these other qualities, you know, into the relationship.
Okay, because and I'm glad you said that just the way you did at the end there, because it almost sounded like you were treading another dangerous path, which was be one person at the beginning of it, and then at this point, whenever that is, 3 or 4 months into the relationship, evolve into somebody else, because that's another huge complaint that men get all the time is you are not the same man that I met.
I don't hear that complaint.
I have to
from
jump
women.
In there because I understand that. I feel him on that one because I think when you start dating somebody and a couple months in, you pretty much laid everything out on the line. And then, you know, I don't think it's fair for somebody to expect you to change. And, you know, I personally just went through that. And, you know,
I'm just saying that there's multi dimensions to all personalities, and you don't have to lay your cards out on the table day one with every single personality trait that you have. You layer it. I mean, just like I think trust is layered. I mean, the things that I would allow a man to be trustworthy with on day one are completely different than 3 months into it.
Okay,
you know, obviously, by the time 3 months comes along, I'm probably going to be, more revealing and more trusting of him and, you know, be more open with him, hopefully down the line. I'm not going to, do all that day one.
Okay,
no,
but...
No, and I don't think he means that either, but, like...
No, absolutely not. Absolutely
right.
Not, but what you are saying right now is it brings up, and I hate doing this, I hate playing devil's advocate, but you keep bringing up these things that have been issues in conversations that I've had with women friends of mine and also in personal relationships in my past, but now what you're saying is, okay, be one way at the beginning of it, and it's not like you're being somebody else, you're just not bringing that side of yourself out at the beginning, and then at a later point it's okay to do that. Well, isn't that as well, and I am not going to be the first guy that's been nailed on this point, as considered as a sin of omission? You didn't tell me about this. You didn't tell me you were like this or had this side of you, and now you're showing this to me? This was not the person that I met and that I became involved with, and now you're telling me that this is a side of you, and now I have to decide if I want to deal with that aspect of you as well.
Okay, I'm not asking you to be deceitful about these things. This is a characteristic that women say they want. For example, they want a man who is sensitive. So 3 months down the line, they should be thrilled to, you know, beyond belief that now the guy is showing a sensitive side to him. That's all I'm saying. It is part of your personality. I'm just saying don't bring it out on day one. I'm not saying hide a negative trait. This is a trait that women, quote unquote, want. This is something that supposedly turns them on. And I'm saying to you, don't do it their way. Do it the manly way, which is to show them that you have the character, that you have the strength, that you are doing the confidence and the protector-provider thing first, because that's the primary core drive that all women have. Even women that make, you know, $250,000 a year and they run companies and this and that and the other, even those women are still looking for the guy to be her equal or maybe even slightly above her. So
that
factor has to be there.
So if you're
when you're trying to evaluate how can, you know, I be that protector or provider for her, as a modern man today, you can't do it. You can't just unilaterally be that way. You sort of have to take a step back and be the protector provider in areas that perhaps she might not be as strong in.
I understand.
Complement each other.
I understand, and I don't disagree with that tact. You know, despite what they say what women say they want, you need to do it a different way. Now, in going a little bit further with that, do you list in this book that you have any number of other helpful things that we might, as men, think that women want that we can ignore because it might simplify our lives too?
Oh, I'm making it very simple.
I'm making it very simple.
There's four core principles that you have to follow. You do those four, you're in. So those four are: confidence is the first one. The second one is connect with her, find commonality with her. The third one is caring. And the fourth one is consistency. Sometimes I call the fourth one character.
What do you think of that? You used the four?
I'm sorry?
Consistency.
You used those four, Heather?
Yes, I do. Consistency. Confidence is definitely one thing. You definitely have to have that. I don't want to date a pushover or somebody that doesn't have their own backbone. I have to see that. Now, I want to know that they're there for me. And you know, respectful of me, and they're there for me if I need them and everything, emotionally, physically, you know, all that good stuff. But consistency, at least for me, that is key. If
it's
you are
huge.
Inconsistent,
it's huge.
And
the players actually know how the reason why players are as popular as they are, all these bad boys are as popular as they are, is because for some reason or another they have an overabundance of the confidence gene.
Yep.
Step number two and three, the connect with her and the caring, they fake it till they make it. They know it's important and they do it, but they're disingenuous with it. They're not really doing it for real. But they know to do those steps. So that's why every woman has at least one or two, you know, players and bad boys in her roster. The thing that the player does not have that a good guy does have is the fourth C, which is character or sometimes I call consistency. They absolutely do not have that. They're here today, gone tomorrow. They call you now. They call you 3 weeks from now. It's like you cannot depend on them. You can't count on them. One day it's, you know, roses. The next day they treat you like an a-hole. It's just up and down, up and down. So that's the one thing that you good guys have in your corner is to be consistent.
Have you ran into any bad boys, Heather?
Oh, we don't want to touch that subject right now.
I think any woman who is a human being, we've all had our share of bad boys.
Yeah. You know,
Connor, did you have a question about the fourth C or the character?
No, actually, I was just going to agree 100% with what you were saying about the players and the fact that they do. I've watched so many of them, I actually crack up when I'm watching them because you're right. That fake it until you make it concept completely destroys any concept of consistency, because it's whatever they need to do at that moment in time to get where they want to go. There is no consistency.
Right, and that's where you can pull your trump card out of the hole.
I'll tell you what, from a guy's standpoint, there is one thing that even a guy, and I would like to think that I have some integrity. I have not even dated in a year and a half now, simply because I'm not the kind of guy that wants to go out and just get laid. And I do value the depth of a relationship, and I am not looking to just go out and get laid. So I don't play those kind of games, but I watch the players out there. And the one thing that I will say, as a guy with some integrity, that still catches us in terms of the consistency is when we want to do whatever we can to please the woman that we're with, even if it isn't consistent with the relationship or who we are or what we're trying to do with them. We have a tendency, or at least I have always had a tendency, to compromise character if it means giving the woman in the relationship that I'm in something that they really want, even if it is a little bit inconsistent, either with me, either with our relationship or where we are at that particular time, I have a tendency to compromise a little bit on that consistency to give her what she wants.
The danger in doing so, especially over a repeated time, is she might lose respect for you.
Even though
she might get what she wants, and even though momentarily she's happy, but she might lose respect, and that's not a good thing for a guy to be in that spot.
I don't disagree with that. I actually learned after the fact that there were several instances where they didn't have respect for me, period. What I'm saying is, as a guy, that's a real tough road to hoe, trying to figure out where those limits are and how to develop that consistency against the fear of, geez, if I don't do this, if I don't give her what she wants, I may lose her anyway. Without having to deal with the deeper issue of, you know what, if I do this, I've probably lost her anyway or shouldn't be with her anyway.
Right. I think the key thing is, I tell my men, is to know what your line in the sand is. So you can't do that on every single instance. And because if you do it on every single instance, you're going to be an a-hole in her eyes. But 10% of the time on issues that really matter to you, that you don't want to compromise your integrity or your position or whatever, that's when you draw the line and say, look, here's the line, I'm not crossing it. And that's it.
Now, can I ask you a question? Are you in the same location as Heather is right now?
I'm not.
No. She's in Ohio.
Well, no. The reason I'm asking is because if she was there with Heather, I was going to say, I have seen Heather's pictures on MySpace. Do you really think a guy like me, even if I knew it was the worst thing in the world for me to say yes to, if I was looking in her eyes and she was batting those eyes at me, I would have any kind of resolution, any kind of character enough to say no?
Well, men, as I write in the book, men are very visual. They're visually driven. So, you know, the little head is going to be talking to you saying, keep your mouth shut.
Exactly.
Yeah. Heather, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. This is something I was wanting to know the answer to. If you could choose between being Miss Ohio and doing Playboy, which would you have chosen and why?
Oh, God, that's a tough one. Because there's pluses to both. There really is pluses to both of those.
This is interesting. Well, I see a hand flashing next to your number. I don't know what that is. But.
I think that I would have for sure, I would have done the Miss Ohio. I really think so in a way. See, those things are on so different, it's like ones, those things are so different, and what you get out of them is also going to be so different. Basically, to me, I hate to say this, because I know I'm probably going to get pigeonholed for this if anybody's listening in. I think that if you do Miss Ohio, you're probably going to come out with a little more of a steady career options. You're probably going to be the girl that graduated magna cum laude and finished, stepped right into a career, is into the community volunteering. Not that I don't either, but it's just, I think a lot of your Playboy models, I'm not saying all, like I said, I don't want a firing squad after me, because I know there's many of them that go to school and go on to different things, but I think they're more out there for the celebrity aspect and the instant gratification than what, say, a Miss Ohio person is. Pageant girls, and I've done both. I've done pageants. I've done, Playboy, obviously. I think that those are two different ending goals.
neither of them are worse or better. It just depends on that person's personality and what their end goal is that they want.
Do you really, Heather, if I could ask a question, do you really think that either one would have been an ending goal or just another stepping stone along the line? I read your blog tonight. I see that you had mentioned that you probably would not have gone the Playboy route or would not go the Playboy route again. But it almost sounds like you're thinking it was a choice of doing one or the other as an end result instead of a stepping stone.
Nah, because, see, I know a lot of pageant girls that have done, like, Miss Teen and, you know, the state pageants and stuff, and have turned around and gone on and done Playboy because maybe they didn't get to that level with the pageants. Pageants are funny little things. They're very political, and actually, they can be more political than a lot of facets of the industry. I truly believe that.
Even more so than the acting? Even more so than film or TV? Because that is hugely political and very nepotistic society. I mean, the nepotism in acting is incredible.
Well, I think the best way to answer that is by saying that everything has politics in it. Everything, down to my horse showing. Horse showing has politics, for goodness sake, which is crazy. But, you know, every aspect of life, lawyers get into bigger firms because they shake the right hands or they know somebody. And you see that with the pageant girls. You see that even with the Playboy models, you know, or magazine models. TV and acting, you know, I hate to say anything because I don't know much about that industry, and I've been very fortunate in what I have done. Again, I'm probably one of the most appreciative or grateful models that are out there because I feel like everything is a gift when you get anything in that industry because there's so many people, men and women, knocking down the door to get into film and TV, to get into modeling. You know, again, that's why I say, you know, pageants versus swimsuit models or Playboy models, it's, I don't want to say it's an end, but it does get you steered in a certain direction. I guess the best way to say it is you can be a Miss Ohio or a Miss Teen model and be the bad girl that goes in and does Playboy, quote unquote. You know, have that. But you can't go and do Playboy and rarely ever turn around and ever think for 1 minute you're going to be Miss Ohio or Miss California. It just doesn't work.
Right. And I can recognize that difference, but I guess I don't see either one as having to be looked at as an end goal.
I should have rephrased that. Not as an end goal, but as a, like you said, like a stepping stone goal in order to get someone, something on the resume. Absolutely. Absolutely. What I'm saying is that those choices that you make are, you have to sit there and decide as a model, and I hate to say this, but getting back into more of the modeling stuff here, if you decide to, okay, just for example, I did swimsuit for a long time. I did some calendars. I did some fashion shows, everything.
I've seen your pics on your MySpace page, and by the way, some of those are absolutely gorgeous shoots. They really are.
Yeah, I was going to say something. One of the things that's interesting is I heard somebody, like, you had to do it, wear a bikini in really cold weather. Is that true, Heather?
Yeah, that's never fun. That sucks. It just does. I mean, I've done that on more than one occasion where it's windy, it's chilly out. And the thing is, a lot of people, just people in general, don't realize that when you're shooting these calendars, you have to really watch the sun because it's outdoor photography. And you can't, you have to be out there in the makeup chair at 5, 6 in the morning, ready to shoot at 8 or 9, because after that, the sun starts getting too high. Same thing with the sunset shots. You know, you have to be out there. You can't be out there before 4 o'clock, and you have such a small time frame to get the shot, the actual the shot.
What do you think for Larry? Because I've heard it's like such a busy job being a model, though.
Oh, you know what? Acting is the same way, though. I mean, I've done shots in the summer where I've got to do a winter-looking scene with a full suit and an overcoat on, and shot in 20 below in the winter wearing nothing but a T-shirt and a pair of jeans.
And it sucks. And everybody will see that. Everybody that, you know, is watching it or looking at that picture, and they're like, oh, that would have been so nice to have been there. That must have been so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. 40 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, you know, to get that picture, there's certain times of day where you have to shoot that. And just like you said, even with the acting, if it's outdoor, there's certain lighting periods that are better than others. And you work in such small time frames. And it's, if you have a big production crew behind you, especially with the acting, you have that more than what you do with the modeling jobs. But when you have people standing behind you going, oh, Jesus, this sounds out of place. Hurry up. We got to get this back in place. Hurry up. We're losing light. We're losing light, people. You know, you're like trying to look all relaxed and sexy or happy and cute, and you've got people just bannering out crap behind you, and you're just trying to look cute, and you're like, oh, God, wait, I'll do this. I'll smile like this. And it's the same with acting. And acting, I think, is even harder because, one, you're moving. One, you're moving, and 9 out of 10 times, if you're not an extra or something, your lips are moving. So not only do you have to get the lines right, you have to turn around and have them come out personality or emotionally right or for care in character. And it's hard when you've got a production crew, you know, standing back there just it's like, oh, my God. You know
what, sweetie? I have done some modeling. I've done some print work, some national stuff. GE Antares, Baxter Healthcare. I've actually got a couple of test shoots this week, but I feel less comfortable, so much less comfortable doing a photo shoot than I do acting, because I am moving, because I've got lines to say, because I'm moving in front of the camera trying to, you know, to get a certain feel or a certain intonation or delivery on the line. I feel so much more comfortable there than I do just standing in front of a camera. I don't envy your job as a model. I think acting for me is so much easier.
Well, and I think that's why Brad Pitt's Brad Pitt. You know, I think that's why you have some that it's just so natural to. For me, I am way more nervous when I have to go on and co-host that TV show or shoot a commercial because, you know, for me, it's real easy to do stills. It's real easy to be photographed. And I guess, you know, I remember back in the day when I first started, oh, my God, I was sweating bullets. I was nervous. I was shaking. You know, and I've looked at my images from 1991 versus 2001 or even 2007. And now it's like old hat. It's easy. It's old hat. I'm comfortable. It doesn't matter if they have 20 people standing there now. It's no big deal. But even 10 years ago in 97, 98, when I was just starting full time and really getting out there, oh, my God, I was still nervous because there I was going from the small, what I call B-list jobs, into the big jobs where they had the makeup artist, the stylist, the, you know, photographer, the photographer's assistant, the crew, the light. I mean.
And see, those are the kind of jobs that I am still working on now with the acting thing. I am not on huge productions. I just started this less than 2 years ago. And I've been lucky enough to really make things happen already in my career. But I'm working on those productions where if you've got 5 or 6 people on the crew for the shoot that day for an 8-hour shoot, and the one person is not only the lighting and sound person, but they're also the cameraman and the wardrobe person, and, you know, there is no makeup person, and you're hustling and bustling for 10 hours in between shoots, moving equipment and getting everything moved from one location to the next. It's those are the kind of things that I'm working with right now.
Oh, yeah, that makes it harder, too. I think in a way it makes it harder, in a way it doesn't, but in a way it does. Then that's where you get more in your time crunch.
Heather, are you there at all?
Mm-hmm.
There? Okay. I wanted to make sure we covered this because we had agreed that this is something that we were going to cover. If someone was a model and they wanted to get into the Playboy magazine, what did they want to do? What is the right way to go about it? Because you said that there's a lot of scams out there.
Oh, my God, there is. The best advice I can give is do not go and do 10,000 shoots nude with 10,000 different photographers, okay? That is not how to get into Playboy. The best way, this is how I did it. I had actually had some photos done with Todd Rupp, who's a very good friend of mine, shot me a million times. I had some done for my boyfriend at the time, right? Nothing bad, very cool. Actually, I wish those would have been used for Playboy. And I had a couple on hand. One of the casting agents had actually found me for, as funny as it is, the college girls issue, which by all means, I'm too old to be a college girl, but they really liked my look. They liked the story with the horses and everything. And they said, you know, I sent them some bikini shots, some headshots. They wanted many, many headshots. I'll be real honest, guys. They want a lot of headshots. And once I sent them that, they said, well, do you have any figure ones? And I said, well, I have a couple that I just did with my photographer for my boyfriend. I love them. Do you want to see them? I sent them in like three of those, and it was a done deal. Next thing you know, I had a contract, you know, a shoot date, and they actually sent the Playboy, the makeup artist. They sent, like, there was four of us and myself, and they actually sent them out to my horse barn, you know, just right out to the horse barn. They wanted to shoot me in my element, everything else, and it went great. Now, since then, I know Jeff Cohen personally. I speak to him. I do have a way that I can sidestep a little bit, I would say, because verbatim in an email, I was told, Heather, if you have any girl that wants to get into Playboy that you know have the look, email me directly. So there are side ways to get in. And by all means, Playboy.com, if you go on their site, they do show up the casting calls. Girls, you need to go to those casting calls. They have them every year over the whole United States. You need to go if you want to be in it. That's a real direct way. Now, if you want to avoid the cattle call, you have some good images, some good full-length shots, fitness, swimwear, headshots. Email them to me. I mean, you can even email them to me. You know, MySpace, and show me where they're at. And by God, you know, I'll be like, hey, Jeff, check out this girl. She wants to be in Playboy. Look at her. Look at her. You know, I did turn in one girl. I drove up to the Ohio casting call. I told Jeff that I was bringing her, Kara, that I was bringing her. Okay, she not only did special editions, but she did just shoot centerfold. So I have got one playmate as a claim to fame already that I've turned in. And by all means, don't go just shooting with every Tom, Dick, and Harry. Don't actually at all. Because, like I said, if you can go to the casting calls, you can get right in. You can get right in that way. Another avenue that you have is the Playboy Golf outing. Playboy puts on their Playboy Golf is their biggest charity raising event every year. And every state has multiple, if not one, but multiple locations. And in those multiple locations, if you are chosen, you basically just be a caddy girl. You're not naked, nothing. Actually, they are very strict about behavior. You're not to get drunk and act a fool. You are to be basically a caddy girl, get things for the golfers, everything else. They give you a great dinner. They give you outfits, all kinds of goodies to take home. If you make the finals, you are taken out to L.A. Once you are out in L.A., they'll find you. When you go to the mansion on those couple parties that they have, like the tea party, which is during the day, if they like your look, believe me, somebody from staff is going to come and pull you aside and talk to you. So there's so many straightforward avenues to get in. By all means, if any of you models have friends, like myself, like what Jeff had told me, you know, hey, if you've got a friend, if you've got a model that wants to get into Playboy, you know what we're looking for, Heather, email me. You know, if you have a Playboy model that is a friend of yours and you want to get in, go through her. Go through her or have her go to one of the casting calls with you. Have her personally take you, because that's what I did with Amanda, and it worked. She was in, and pretty much she just finished up doing Beauty and the Geek, the latest season here, and she's just kind of skyrocketed from there. And it all started with just taking her up to Cleveland to the casting call.
Okay.
That's an excellent idea, is to go with a former playmate or something.
I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up is that it is dangerous, and I wouldn't want to see anybody I cared about, you know, regardless of what your opinion is, if someone, you know, doing Playboy, not get them getting hurt.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, really, there's enough modeling out there, and it's fine. I'm not knocking down glamour models, because I don't want a firing squad for that. I still will take the artistic job where maybe it's, they call it artistic news, I guess, or figure work. I still love that stuff. I love that stuff because I can look back 20 years from now and be like, oh my God, my abs really looked like that. Oh my God, I had that kind of muscle. But it's done in such a different way. If you could put that on the wall in an art gallery, there's a huge difference. And you'll have some people that are sketch artists, and they will bring in models to stand there. Those are very good paying jobs. They're wonderful jobs. And it's really neat to have that.
Hey, but, Heather. You
know, yeah.
I was going to say there's also another possibility. An ex-girlfriend of mine when I lived in Utah had a photographer that she had worked with who had done a lot of freelance photography for Playboy, who actually did a test shot for her as well. And because he had done some freelance stuff for them, was able to submit her.
Now, yes, that you are right. That is another avenue you can take. I know Dennis Rolliff up in Akron, Ohio. He had done the same thing years ago. He had actually shot Heather Kozar, who became Playmate of the Month and then Playmate of the Year. He is like, that's what you have to find. You have to find those go-to people that can get your images right on the desk where they need to be. And many of these photographers out there are claiming to get you into Maxim or claiming to get you into Playboy. They can't. They can't. Unless they can say, these are my images. Go to this special edition or go to this month in Playboy. This I shot. Okay, if they can refer you to issues that they have images in, by all means, those are some go-to people too. Yes, absolutely.
Well, and then you're going into what you just said, you're going into those players who say, I know this and I know this these people and I've done work for these people. And how do you weed out the liars from the people that really do know what they're talking about?
Well, for one thing, you have to look at their images. You know, if you look at most of the Playboy photographers, if you actually look at their personal photography site, you don't just have nude women up there. A lot of it is tear sheet. A lot of it is published work. And a lot of their images aren't even the published work that haven't maybe been in a magazine, whether it's Playboy or, you know, Cosmo or whatever. You know, they still, their images look like you could tear them out right out of a magazine. And that's the biggest thing I try to get through to girls. If the photographer's images do not look like you could tear them out of a magazine, you don't want to shoot with them. There's no point.
No, I haven't seen one tear sheet from anything I've done yet. I haven't gotten a copy of one tear sheet yet.
You should have. The minute it's published, it should be public. It should be sent to you. All the companies I've ever worked with have been so good about not sending me the images, but the published images. Because remember, when you work a commercial print job, you're signing off on that. Whether it's freelance and you got it yourself independently through an agency, that agency has signed off a commercial release. So,
right.
Therefore, you can't, you know, you can't really sit there and sorry, I'll use the cuss word, bitch, and say, where's my CD images? Well, you can't do that. But when the published work comes out, normally they'll give you a heads up. They'll send you a copy, they'll send your agency a copy, or they will refer you, contact you and refer you to the printed materials.
Well,
again, I've been really lucky in that aspect.
Heather, we have another caller. Do you want to take this call? Or?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Heather, I'll get off the line. Pleasure speaking with you, and I've already sent you an email through MySpace. It's Illinois Craig. Love to talk to you sometime.
Yep, it sounds like me and you have had a lot of the same rigmarole, so yep, absolutely.
Okay, sweetie, you have a great one.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hello.
Hey, Heather.
Yay.
Hey.
Hey, this is Gary of Sunshine.
Oh, hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm glad
good,
I turned
good.
Back on.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, because your advice is really good.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
I don't know how, still in this day and age, with all the information that's out there on the internet about what to look out for and stuff, I still watch girls, and guys really for that matter, just really getting into the wrong hands and really not taking the right advice. And, you know, it's like, how do they bypass all that? I'm not sure. How did they not read any of it?
I've been doing my business for 15 years now. And I always, you know, I'm shooting a lot of these girls who are starting out. And I'm like, you know, don't go to shoots alone for one, you know, and and all this stuff. And it's amazing to me, like, you know, you were talking earlier, how these girls end up in these shoots, some of these shoots. I'm like, what were you thinking? You know?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's like, what were you thinking? And
yeah.
It's hard, you know, and you don't want to, like, make them feel bad. But yet, like I said, with all the information, even I've seen a lot of photographers like yourself have, hey, girl, this is some guidelines. This is what you should look out for. This
yeah.
is what you should do. This is what you shouldn't do. I see a lot of photographers, good, the reputable ones, taking the initiative to put a frequently asked question page up or how-to page up. And,
right.
you know, it's I don't know how the girls are bypassing it. I don't know what's happened. I know one thing. If I still have it my way, I have one project that I would like to endeavor on. If I can if I can find the time and the means to it, I will. And I don't want to say it, obviously, because I don't want somebody else to steal it, but it would really be a way to filter only certain models being on a site, certain photographers being on a site. And I think it would be something well needed because I've yet to see it done. I've seen it started on sites, but then it goes to the wayside. It's like the almighty dollar starts talking. And, you know, again, there's ways that these girls do not agree that they can get into it without spending very little money, very little.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, and as you said before, there's so many scams out there. Like, I'm looking to do something nationally, which I can't divulge now, but, you know,
I
want to make
crazy?
Sure. But at the same time, I mean, I might share it with you off air.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that, you know, there's so many scams out there with contests and modeling scams and everything else. And I want to, you know, if I shoot with somebody, I want to see them go big.
Right.
You know, I don't want to see them get trapped up into, you know, if they want to go toward the Playboy route, fine. But if they don't, then don't push them that way.
Right, and there's so many options. There's so many options out there. I mean, even the mom next door that's 40 years old, there's jobs out there for her. There's banking ads that need shot. Dental office that, you know, I'm not making it any less because I'll tell you what, those commercial print jobs pay pretty nice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're looking at 500 and up. And that's just usually for a year release. You know, that's for them shooting you that day, using your image for a year, and then it comes back to the agent or back to yourself as, okay, we want to use you for another year. We want to use that image. Okay, we're paying you another 500. You know, there again, there is so many jobs out there. I'll tell you what, with taking over four models, one thing that I have found that there is a very, very big need for that I haven't even been able to find and get on the roster is a decent-looking 70-year-old guy, grandma and grandpa. I don't know if they don't want to do it or what, but, you know, there's a call. I've actually had clients, you know, call saying, hey, you know, we'd like to shoot this. This is what we have pictured. And I'm like, I don't have anybody that age range. I'm so sorry. You know, and that's came up. You know, and again, even going into the agency thing, one thing, again, if you are an agent, you make your money from the commission. You make your 20% from the jobs that you book your models. And you don't, you know, we take our models, the ones that come on board with us, we let them know who to TFP with. You know, hey, this photographer will shoot you. I know they'll want to shoot you because you obviously, you have that look. I am very honest. I will not even mess with somebody that doesn't have that look. There's no, what's the point in them taking up my filing cabinet space? None.
Right.
Does them no good, it does us no good. And same with the photographer. You know by looking at a photographer's portfolio if he's for real or not. His models are going to reflect that. The quality of the models are going to reflect that. And, you know, if a photographer, another thing, you know, for these girls that are starting out, if a photographer declines shooting with you and it happens over and over again with different photographers, not to be mean or rude, but that there is the first clue. If you're getting turned down by multiple agencies, multiple photographers, maybe you're a cute girl, but maybe it's just you're missing something. You know, you're just missing something.
Is there, I think we went a little over on time, but it's been like an hour and 24. I think the segment was for an hour, but
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It was fun having you on. DT, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's okay. I don't know if it's okay, Heather. It's all right.
That's good.
I'm really glad that we answered the question, the important questions, because I really wanted to cover whether there's a lot of dangers in modeling, and I really did not want to see anybody get hurt.
Right, and I'll tell you what, Johnny, if you get some people that are giving you feedback, as in, okay, you know what, we listened to this, now we do have some questions, let me know, we can reschedule something here once I get back from Florida. We'll get something rescheduled with plenty advance again to where maybe those people that are like, well, now I do have some questions. Okay, they can call back in. I've always been a straight shooter. I always will be.
This interview is a good interview. It'll be good. This is probably one of my best interviews. So thanks for coming.
Heather, do you have an agency now? Is that what you're doing primarily now?
Yes, I do. I've had it for 2 years now. I've had it since 2005. And it was something that I'd always thought about doing. A friend of mine pushed me into it. I wasn't sure if I was going to like it or not, but I did really end up liking it. And so I've really taken, granted, I'm not elite. I'm not Ford. I'm not ICE models, but we do a nice job, and everybody that's worked with us is really happy. And as a model and as an agent, it's a lot easier for me as a model to go to bat for the girls. And yet to read, to be that good in between. I understand the client's needs. I understand the model's needs. And, that's the biggest thing. You can't – some of these agencies are really all out for themselves. You're a number. You're not a name. They won't shoot it straight with you. They'll hide things from you. And it's not right. It's not right. And the girls that are with my agency, I keep them up to date on everything. They know the good, the bad, and the ugly. Whether they want to or not, but it has almost built more of a team type feeling than just a businessy cold feeling, an agency like a cold type agency. It has built more of a team to where even some of the other models that get referred jobs are like, I can't do this, but can one of the other models do it? I mean, it's come to that rapport, and that's what I was really wanting. That's what I think an agency should be about.
It seems like they're a great reflection on you. So it seems like you've set the tone and they're following suit. So kudos to you. And I really like the fact that the decision maker, has walked their boots before. So often in our industry, in media, the decision maker has never walked that trail. And so you just think that there's like a, nepotism going on or biases or prejudices or what have you, and they can't exactly relate to, the talent because they've got their own agenda. And
correct.
she might be the correct person for the job, but she doesn't get the job because of all these other various factors. So it's really a headache. I think in these industries, it's always great when the person who's the decision maker has already walked in your shoes.
Right, right. And I can tell, talking to a client, I can always tell what they're looking for, And sometimes I've worked with some companies here that through form now that really their first time, they were first time ever hiring a model for a convention or for a shoot, for a product or something. And they're like, well, geez, we're not sure. And I'm like, okay, what do you want to convey? So I've had to help on the creative end, too, saying, well, now this type of girl, she's going to create brand awareness in this way, shape, or form. So it also helps me to figure out who's right for that job, And so I've had to work a few times with new businesses that are like, okay, we've never hired models before. What do we do? And it's like, it's okay. It's not hard. It's not scary. Talk to me. And it really... I don't know. It really helps because then I can sit there and go, okay, Tara, for example, is one of my really good models. I send her out a lot of stuff. She's like my right-hand girl. And I'll be like, Tara, all right, this company's never had a, model work for them. They're very, very nice. This is their product. This is the message they want to convey. Let's go to it for this route. This will have repeat business for us. they will come back if you can. And so a lot of times that's what we do. You know, I will send out my absolute really experienced girls so that that client is like gotten 100% and then some. You know, they're like, wow, this way exceeded our expectations. And I have tons of referrals on my site, you know, that the clients were like, oh, my God, thank you so much. You know, we appreciate it. Even Playboy gave me a referral. I mean, that's pretty big. When you're a small little agency and Playboy will actually be like, you know what, we will use you guys again and again. You know, that speaks, actions speak louder than words. It's still
absolutely
louder than words, and
well, that's great.
Are the bread and butter.
That's great. It's really great. It's been really great having you and DT on. Thanks for letting me talk to you both.
Oh, no problem. Not
my
at
pleasure.
All right. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'll
absolutely
talk to you both on MySpace, okay?
Okay.
All right.
MySpace, Dating Tips for Men, FOR.
And mine's, yep, and mine's just H Paraso. Mine's just myspace.com/H Paraso. So, not too hard to remember, but
okay.
Thank you, and I'll definitely look forward to talking to you.
Okay. All right.
Take care.
Hope you
bye now.
Again.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.